Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's I was your host, Evan Sutter, and joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSutter. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. You can follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page and RA at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over there is very much appreciated, as always. And joining us today for our Friday episode, getting back together, Brendan, after we had our own episodes Wednesday and Thursday, really what looking forward to most post-All-Star break. But today we're back with a draft episode. I know many Suns fans may are kind of drafted out at this point as far as prospects go. I know this is probably the first time in a while, though, for the 2020 class, Brendan, we've really had a full episode dedicated to this. I know we had Jackson Frank on before to have an episode about the draft, but today we're going to have three different prospects from each of us, so six total in each section. We're going to start off with the guards and head into some other positions as well, other players who make sense for the Suns. So, Brendan, I'll start off with you. Who's the first one on your list that we should own?
It's actually a guy I think Suns fans will be familiar with, which is Nico Mannion of Arizona, point guard over there. And just to give a little bit more background as to how I was, what we want to do with this episode, which is guys that I think we can guess are part of how the Suns are operating with the draft. I think we know a few things about how they view the draft, what types of players they value more highly than other teams, and it's only been one draft, but I think just understanding how they built the rest of the roster too, I think these guys will be people for you all at home to watch the next couple months if you want to really zero in on what types of things the Suns might be doing. And that's all to say that Nico checks a lot of those boxes, not only being a player that the Suns will have some familiarity with. I know we talked about it at the time, but this is a kid, man, whatever you want to say, who has been at Suns home games since the beginning of last season. He's been around this team, obviously not so much this year because he's been in college in Tucson, but has been around this organization for a while. They've had obviously every opportunity to watch and scout him. I know they were at a couple games early in the season when I was there, and I'm sure they've caught plenty of Nico. So I think that part is a box checked. I think the fact that Sean Miller was at Suns training camp and has a little bit of a relationship with this coaching staff in Phoenix, to me, speaks that, you know, obviously that's mostly been for DeAndre Ayton, but not a crazy idea to think that Nico might have come up a time or two. We obviously know Robert Sarver's connection as a U of A alum. So just a few kind of tertiary things that I think play a small part. But as a basketball player, this guy is, I think, perfect for how the Suns want to play. And perfect, I think, alongside Devin Booker, a guy that is really that shooting, playmaking combo guard. I know he's really a pretty traditional point guard, but because he can shoot, I think he can fit next to pretty much anybody. So that's just a little bit about him. We can get into the weaknesses too, because he has had a really rough stretch lately. But what have you thought about Nico in the little bit that we've gotten to see him in conference play so far, Evan?
Yeah, certainly the playing style is definitely up the Suns alley, because the way he's able to push the pace like a Ricky Rubio, the way he's able to set other of his teammates up, it's not on the Rubio level, of course, but it's at least a moldable area of Nico's game where you could definitely see them being able to use him as a really fast-paced transition point guard who sets guys up, gets open threes, hits them at a good clip. So far this year, Nico's actually shooting a little below average from three, 32% on five attempts per game, but I'm glad he brought the negatives too, Brendan, because as far as efficiency goes for Nico this year, shooting 32% from three, like I mentioned there, but only 44.5% from two-point range this year. He's actually shooting under 40% from the field so far this year, 39.3. Does that worry you at all? I know, I mean, obviously the Suns have a point guard, not Ricky Rubio, who is really a sieve offensively, but I really believe that a guy like Nico has more upside as a scorer, but does this kind of year worry you at all?
Yeah, it does. I think to break it down a little bit more too, to get a little more specific with those numbers, he's shooting 57.1% at the rim this year, which is very low. I mean, even for a smaller guard, you want it to try to be at 60 or above, I think, for a guy who's going to have the ball in his hands quite a bit. 38.8% on two-point jumpers, so, you know, those mid-range looks and floaters and things like that. So I think it's a real problem. If you've seen Arizona at any point in this season, they've had a lot of close games, and they've had a lot of situations in those close games where Part of it is team creation, which is why I think his fit with Booker would be great. But Arizona doesn't have a Devin Booker. They don't have another scorer, really. And so it's been him operating with the ball in his hands late in games, and he doesn't have the athletic burst to get past his man. He can get there, but and then even if he gets to the rim, he struggles with strength. He's not a very long, athletic type of player, obviously, and so he's not a great finisher. And so it really starts to get dicey. It's a lot of what we have talked about with Rubio this year. It gets dicey when it comes to just how is he going to score at the next level consistently if he's not just taking open threes or even pull-up threes. That's not really an entire offensive diet, even if you're a great passer. He's going to need to develop his scoring inside the three-point arc, and this season hasn't been very good when it comes to that. I think that you could even make the case he's gotten worse as the season has gone along, which is obviously not promising. I also think, just to mention his defense really quick before we move on to your guard here, you're going to watch him and think his defense is bad because he's, again, not very athletic, not very strong, but he puts in way more effort than you would typically associate with a freshman guard and a high usage offensive player like he is. So I'm a little less worried about that. I mean, he's going to be somebody that's a negative, somebody you probably are going to want to have some strong wing defenders on the court with him most of the time, especially early in his career. But he's not as much of a "we're just screwed every time he steps on the floor" type of player like some, not only in this class, but just that's typically how you would view a rookie perimeter defender. I think he'll be a little bit better than that.
You might as well move on to my guy next year, Brandon, on the list as far as guards go. Actually, I have him rated above Nico. I don't know about you, but Tyrese Haliburton of Iowa State, I think, is one of my guys in this draft class the more I watch him, because he kind of reminds me a little bit of the Villanova version of Mikal Bridges, but he's playing the point guard position. Just as far as how efficient he is offensively, he's a great defender, averaged 2.5 steals per game, almost a block per game. 6'5", almost has a 7-foot wingspan too, so he checks the length box, checks the versatility box for this team. I think he's a great fit in this 0.5 system too, Brent, as far as what Monty Williams wants to do, because I can just imagine Haliburton and Mikal taking the two strongest defenders. You have Booker really hiding on defense, but Haliburton, his playmaking ability too, I think is really, really underrated. 6.5 assists per game to go 15 points on a really good assist turnover ratio. I just think that if Halliburton's on the board, I really doubt he will be. I think he's going to be like a top five, top six pick by the time the draft rolls around. I know he's out for the year with a broken wrist, but just off the film that we've seen so far this year of Haliburton, I think he's a top five, top six player in this draft class.
Yeah, I was actually, I don't know. I feel like I was higher on him last year, and seeing the fact that he, kind of similar to Nico, wasn't really able to add this season much of a secondary option. Like, he's a pretty, I feel pretty okay about his spot up shooting. I feel pretty okay about, he's going to be a great passer. He's going to be able to score in transition. He's going to be pretty effective doing all those things, turning defense into offense. You know, just with his size, you think maybe he can be a little bit of a matchup buster in the post eventually, different things like that, just because of how unique his frame is. But I just feel kind of similarly to Nico there, which is, when the ball is in his hands late and defenses are taking away passing lanes, defenses are not letting him get to the basket, I'm not sure what he does offensively to help a team. And, that's a high standard to hold him to. But I think if you're talking about a top 10 or a lottery pick, that's a pretty worthy thing to wonder about. And so that's where I am with him. I think defensively he would be a huge upgrade over what they have at the guard spots right now. And just having that youth, I just wonder about offensively. I'm not sure if I love him next to Booker. I think he presents a lot of the same issues as we've seen with Rubio. And I know they just signed Rubio, who's not an incredible shooter, but I do kind of... Do you think that him not being an incredible... I know the percentages show it, but he's not really an elite level, really high level shooter at all. Do you think that would give the Suns pause? We know how much they value shooting.
He's not a sniper, but he's at least a guy who's capable of hitting those open shots, which I think is a plus. I know it's not like an elite trait, like you said, Brandon. He's not a guy who's going to be shooting like Damian Lillard-esque threes per game, but I really feel like he's a guy who's at least going to hit the open threes. And Ricky Rubio's done it this year, catch and shoot wise. It's surprising. He's like 37% on catch and shoot threes. If Halliburton can at least do that on a higher clip volume per game, I think that he definitely makes sense. I think one of the things that I really like about Halliburton, though, I love using advanced metrics for these guys because I think it tells a lot about what could come in prospects. And you look at Halliburton last year, only had a 9% usage. This year, he doubled that to 20.0, and he had really great numbers across the board and maintained his efficiency. So that's the one thing I like as far as if you increased his role a bit more, he still is producing at a same or better level.
Yeah, and you look at – it's hard. Like people might look at the team and think that it's his fault. Like this Iowa State team took a big step back this year, but they had they had a very good roster last year. I mean, a roster, as you just said, that allowed him to take a step back and only be a 9.2% usage guy, which is pretty crazy to think about, and really just lock in on defense and score, you know, take four or five shots a game. They had Talen Horton Tucker and Mariel Shayok, who both got drafted, or I don't know if Shayok did, but he's a two-way guy for the Sixers right now, and Horton Tucker's in the Lakers G League team. So they lost some NBA talent, and they've basically been 500 this year, and his advanced metrics still show he's been a huge, huge positive for them. So I think he's going to be a good NBA player. I think he's going to be a rotation guy, if not a starter, for quite a while, just because he's so smart, can pass well, can defend. I think really what it comes down to for me is, just as far as a fit with the Suns, to me it would be you're putting the ball in Booker's hands, and I just don't know if they're ready to do that. I don't know if they ever will want to do that based on how we've seen this season play out.
Good point. And I think just to close this segment out, Brennan, how would you like closely rank these two guys? I feel like if the Suns really are like, if they do keep their pick, I still doubt they end up keeping their pick in the end, but if they decide we're going to go after a point guard in this year's draft, how would you rate Nico and Halliburton? Because I feel like those two will be connected pretty heavily if that's the case.
Yeah, I actually think, you know, I try to separate it out, like who I like more, my you know, big board, if we want to call it that, versus what the Suns might do. And I actually think I'm aligned with what the Suns would do on this one. I think I have Nico higher. I know it's actually probably an unpopular opinion at this, or not unpopular, but I think I'm against most of the consensus at this point, putting it that way. But to me, I just think I trust Nico on both ends a little bit more overall as a player that's going to be able to impact winning with his shooting than I do with Halliburton. But I think they'll both be lottery picks when it's all said and done.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. And just to show you, this is really the latest we've done the draft, just really diving in deep to this year because the Suns are still in the playoff race technically. But from like the mock construct of a board I've started to put together, at least like 10, 15 guys, Halliburton is 7 and Mannion's 8. So they're right next to each other. And I think that's definitely going to be close. I lean Halliburton right now, but if Nico improves and he has a big March Madness, I think he could really rush the boards here too. But anything else, Brandon, you want to hit as far as our two guard prospects we want to do before we head into some other ones?
No, let's go to forwards next.
All right, let's dive into those two intriguing options for the Suns that could be on the table for them in the draft. Before we do so, I wanted to remind you guys, if you own a local business, if you want to be with us here on Locked On Suns, have us talk about your business. I'm sure you've heard all about the great advertisers here working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you know, Locked On Suns is great for your local business to reach passionate Suns fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company a unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener. Suns fans out there just like you. And a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income that puts your money in your company right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. Let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you guys soon. Alrighty, Brennan, I'll give you the floor here to start off this next time because these two guys I feel like are also pretty similar as far as where they might rank on the boards here in March and April. But I think the one we're going to hit on first from your side is probably consensually higher than the other one. Obi Toppin of Dayton, who you actually had a chance to watch in person this year.
I did. I got to see him play, him and Dayton play against St. Louis early in the season. It's a guy that I've followed closely. I'm actually writing a feature on him that's hopefully going to come out fairly soon. So I got to interview him, and I got to interview Anthony Grant, the head coach over there, and a whole bunch of people associated with him. So I'm a little bit dug into the world of Obi Toppin this college season. Just a guy that I think you watch, and it's just hard to not get excited to start thinking about him, how he fits in the NBA. He's just such a guy who has strengths that that fit the NBA game, and then at the same time, these very glaring weaknesses that make you worry about him specifically in the NBA game. So it's very kind of night and day, especially when you compare his offense to his defense. And offensively, I think he's about as solid a fit in this system as any forward could be. I think he's a surefire bet to be a pretty good offensive kind of role player in this in the NBA. 67.2 true shooting, 27.6 usage rate, scoring almost 20 a game for one of the best offenses in the country, if not the best. I'm not sure where they rank currently. They've been near number one all season. Playing small ball five for Dayton this year, but I think probably a 4-5 sort of combo guy at the next level. An amazing post player, cerebral passer, great spot-up shooter, much improved on that front. And yeah, then you look at the defense and it gets pretty ugly at times. Not a great, he has a high center of gravity. So he's very long, very athletic, but he kind of shuffles his feet a little bit. You've seen a lot of guys, like even Ayton, I think, struggles with that at times where he's just not very fluid because his center of gravity is so high that he's not quite that level of athlete. What have you seen from Obi? I know you've watched him quite a bit too, Evan.
Yeah, he's a very versatile player, and certainly the Suns and at least James Jones have shown they love versatile prospects, versatile players, and Obi Toppin definitely fits that billing. So far this year, he's actually averaging 19 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, and 1.5 blocks per game. So he's really stuffing that stat sheet for Dayton, and I think he's definitely a player, if they're going to target a four in this draft, that could probably fit the best, maybe, or maybe not the best, but at least have the highest upside. With the guy DeAndre, and I think Obi Toppin makes sense, of course. But let me ask you, Brent, because I was looking at this. I know he's an older prospect. I didn't realize how exactly old he was. He's a sophomore this year. Yeah, he's going to be 22 in 2 weeks. Does that worry you at all?
It worries me in terms of him getting better. I think when it comes to the Suns, that's exactly part of the reason that I think he's a very decent chance to end up in Phoenix. I mean, that's one of the things that I think we have to keep in mind with how they'll approach this draft. A lot of the guys in this year's top 10 are freshmen or young international players like Killian Hayes or Denny Avdija or whoever. It's a lot of very young, very, very young players, and Obi is one of the only ones who's not. Yeah, he went to prep school after high school and then redshirted.
Oh, wow.
So that's why he's so old. So he basically had two. He's like you said, he's about to be 22. So, or he's already 22. So he has two extra years on where he should be because of those little pit stops.
That's interesting, and I'm glad you brought that up. I don't know how I forgot it, but Ty Jerome and Cam Johnson were two of the oldest prospects in the 2019 draft. So that's certainly, like you said, right up the Suns' alley.
Yeah, it is, and I think the other thing to mention before we move on to your guy, to me, I don't know how much this really matters, but I know that Monty Williams is a guy that is humble enough to rely on other people when it comes to evaluating this type of thing. And he's said before that he watches college tape of these players. We know he, like I said, brought Sean Miller to training camp and has connections all around the league that I think he definitely calls upon when he needs to. And so Anthony Grant, the head coach at Dayton, went to Dayton in the 80s and has coached all around the league, VCU, Alabama. But he was an assistant with the Thunder when Monty and Darko Rajakovic and Mark Bryant all served on the Thunder staff. Anthony Grant helped fill that assistant staff out under Billy Donovan. And so they know each other very well. And I think if there was any semblance of a possibility that Obi might be a candidate for the Suns, they would have a pretty quick call right to Grant to figure out what they needed to know. And I think that is the kind of thing that I don't think that's a stretch to say that relationship might play a part come June.
I didn't even know that, so I'm glad you brought that up. And that could definitely play a part here because, of course, Monty Williams is not their scouting prospects, and he's going to rely on guys like that. And if Grant puts in a good word for Obi Toppin, I think that's going to go a pretty long way for him. But looking across at the opposite spectrum here as far as forwards go, Patrick Williams is only 18. He's going to be not turning 19 until August of this year. So he's born in 2001, where he looks like a really versatile prospect for Florida State, Brandon. And in 20 minutes per game this year, he's averaging 9 points, 4 rebounds, a block per game while shooting 35% on threes on a low volume. But when I've watched Patrick Williams play, Brandon, it kind of reminds me, I mean, he's not like Jonathan Isaac, but as far as physically goes, like add on another 15, 20 pounds of muscle to his body, 6'8", very versatile, athletic guy. I feel like if the Suns were going to want to try to get like a versatile wing defender, not a high usage player that can do all the dirty work next to Mikal Bridges long term, I think Patrick Williams, if he could be a stretch 4-2, shoot 34-35% for three consistently on the NBA level, I think he fits very, very well with what this team's trying to build.
Yeah, this is a guy that I have not had a chance to watch as much as I would like. And it's hard with the way that Florida State recruits is they just have such a polished style of play, and a lot of their guys tend to stand out. I know he's the one, and he definitely, with his block and steal percentages, just the way that he's able to take up space on defense, he is the top prospect. But I'll kind of defer to you in terms of how you think he would fit. And also, I mean, you kind of touched on that, but also with the low volume of threes as far as attempts so far, if you buy that shot actually translating to the NBA, and just the other thing with me that comes to mind for him is, again, a guy I'm not positive. that sounds like a Ryan McDonough draft pick. Yeah, maybe not a James Jones draft.
No, it definitely is. He's going to be 18 until August, so I don't think he would be in the Suns' rotation next year, to be honest, because I just don't see Monty Williams and James Jones trusting a just-turned 19-year-old right before training camp to really get significant minutes early on. But if he hits, Brent, I think he's going to really hit. I think he could be a really versatile guy from what I've watched. I like him along the same lines as Obi Toppin. They're pretty close for me on my board, too. Just comparing them so far per 40 minutes so far this year, Patrick Williams, he's averaging 17 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.7 steals, and 2 blocks per game, while attempting 3 threes at a 35% clip. Go to Obi Toppin per 40 minutes so far this year. He's at 24.7 points per game, 10 rebounds, 2.5 assists, with 1.3 steals, 1.8 blocks. So nearly the same defense production. Of course, Toppin's a better offensive player, but it's hard to imagine. I know Toppin's 22, so this is where age and upside and production come into play, really. And that's really how the NBA draft is nowadays, just weighing the ceilings versus the actual production so far of a player. And I wonder what Patrick Williams would be like at age 22, where Obi Toppin is now, you know?
For sure. And I think Patrick Williams is clearly going to be a better defensive player than Toppin. I think anyone who looks at Toppin's, you know, block numbers or things like that, I really think he's going to be a below average defensive player in the NBA. I think a best case scenario for him is he finds a scheme and a coach and teammates that he can just survive on defense and make plays here and there. But Patrick Williams would definitely be better. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the other thing to consider, I know I keep harping on the age and some of these things that we saw the Suns prioritize in 2020 or in 2019 during that offseason, but we also can't necessarily make that into a track record. So if they were to take Patrick Williams, I mean, we would just kind of have to reassess really what they value. Maybe this draft, they feel like, okay, we have a decent core now. We have guys like 10 deep who can win some games for us, and Booker and Ayton have taken steps. Let's maybe start to add to our back haul, our guys that can develop in the background here for us and get better. So maybe Patrick Williams isn't that crazy of a thought. So I think both of these guys, I think the four spot in that, assuming they pick in the, you know, 8 to 14 range, I think there's a lot of players that'll be in play, and these two are definitely at the top of the list. Let's move on to a couple more wildcard draft picks that you guys should have your eyes on. I was doing the math here, and it's kind of crazy. Conference tournaments start in, I think the first one's in like 18 days or something, 19 days. So we are right around the corner from the fun part of college season where you can watch all these guys play head-to-head really all month long. So we'll get you a couple more before we get out of here. But before that, today's show brought to you by the Arizona Office of Tourism and everything they do down in the Valley of the Sun for the Cactus League. Follow your favorite baseball team to Arizona this spring. Take advantage of the beautiful weather, baseball all day long, amazing restaurants, amazing local and national music, live music all around. You just go to one of these stadiums, and it really is just like, I mean, a party, I don't know, a celebration of baseball. There's just a ton of crap going on all the time. Get a meal first thing in the morning, hit up a little concert, go to a baseball game, head back out in the night, get some dinner, get some drinks. Like, they go all out around each of these stadiums all throughout the spring. Stay near one of them at one of the beautiful resorts and hotels around the valley and just watch baseball and have a good time. I mean, that's about as simple as it gets. They're cheaper tickets than you'll really find at any stadium across the country during the season. You get right up close with these guys. You can get autographs. You can get them to take pictures, whatever you want to do. It's a very laid-back environment, very fun for adults, for the family, for anyone who loves baseball. So plan your spring training getaway right now at visitarizona.com/springtraining. Again, head to visitarizona.com/springtraining to plan your getaway right now. Wild card guys to watch in this draft. We kind of each went a different direction. We got you the point guards in the first segment, some power forward big men options in the second segment. Now Evan and I are going to just give you a couple guys off the top of our head that we were just interested in. And mine is Aaron Nesmith of Vanderbilt, and a guy kind of like Tyrese Haliburton, who you talked about, Evan, in the first segment, whose season was unfortunately ended with an injury, a right foot injury, about a month ago, and he basically was determined to be out for the rest of the year right away after that. But when you talk about what the Suns valued in the 2019 draft, I think he really fits it to a T. One of the best shooters while he was healthy. In 14 games, he was 52% on 8.2 three-point attempts per game.
Whoa.
Now, I'm not saying he's going to shoot 50% from three in the NBA. I don't even think he would have stayed there if he had been healthy the rest of the college season. But he made a big stride. He was already about league average as a freshman. Then as a sophomore, just took this incredible leap in volume and in efficiency. So about a 6'6", like a big 6'6", though. Very long, very broad-shouldered. A guy that you think is going to be a pretty elite-level prospect, at least physically, in the NBA. It's just a matter of getting there. And a good shooter. And the big thing with him this year was they basically just said, all right, we're getting you ready for the NBA. He took a bunch more shots. He was the focal point of the offense, scored 23 a night for them, and he was defending the best opposing player on defense. So I think he's a guy that he's kind of being forgotten right now just because he's not playing, and Vanderbilt was pretty bad this year. But I think by the time the combine comes around and teams just take another look at him, it's like pretty picture-perfect 3-and-D type of player. So somebody that I think the Suns could really use.
Yeah, I did not know he was shooting over 50% from three when he was playing this year, and that says a lot, especially for a bigger 6'6 wing like Nesmith. And I think he fit really well with Mikhail and Cam, wouldn't he? I mean, it just feels like he's the type of guy. I know you throw maybe Kelly in there, it's a lot of wings, but I think Nesmith actually fits with all three of them, doesn't he? I mean, if you're talking about what you're saying as far as him being a versatile defender, a guy who's a marksman from three, maybe at least like 37, 38, or 40%+ from three, he's a high IQ player. It seems like that's really the kind of player the Suns really prioritize.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he'll have to get a little better on the ball defensively. This was really this is another guy I got to see in person this year, and I talked to Jerry Stackhouse about him, and he was basically saying, like, the ability to guard those primary options, that's not something they necessarily felt great about with him. It was just something they were trying to help develop him, and he was their best option. They were kind of in a reset season because this is Stackhouse's first year coaching the team, so they played a little differently on both sides of the ball. But I mean, just physically, like, you look at him, and obviously you feel pretty good about his ability to grow into that role. It's just, I don't think you can quite trust him. But for the Suns, it's like Mikal Bridges is already that guy, and so this would be a really bench option for them, and somebody maybe to help make up for the eventual potential departure of Kelly Oubre if that time comes. So I think he's definitely somebody they're going to look at, and just kind of, again, looking at he's a sophomore, and I think they prioritize guys who came from good programs or are just kind of good people, good culture guys. And playing under Jerry Stackhouse and really being entrusted with the leadership that he was in his second season at Vanderbilt under a former NBA player who has a lot of respect around the league, I think that's the type of human being that would appeal to the Suns.
Yeah, he definitely checks almost every box as far as from what we think the Suns prioritize in prospects. And Nesmith definitely, I think, is, as far as, like, connection to the team, I know Obi Toppin's up there, but I think maybe he's right below there as far as maybe the ones that make the most sense from ones we talked about so far. But Tyrese Maxey is my player. I was going to go the international route here, but to keep it more familiar for the listeners out there, I'm going with Tyrese Maxey, the Kentucky combo guard. He's 6'3", 200 pounds. Really not efficient. I'm not a big fan of the lack of efficiency in his game, but I'm just thinking from the Suns' perspective, Brennan, he's an athletic wing. He's a young, moldable prospect. He's a guy who I think could be like a Jordan Clarkson off your bench, maybe give you like 12 to 15 points per game off your bench at some point for the next 3 or 4 years. I don't see much as far as him ever being a starter next to Devin Booker, but if you need some points off the bench and the Suns have been desperately needing a high-volume bench scorer for the, really throughout the season, maybe Max could be that guy.
I think he could. I mean, I just, to me, where he's being considered, which is like a potential top five pick, I mean, I think there will be teams who are a lot higher on him than even you seem to be, because I think that if you're drafting him there, you want him to be a starter, you know? So I actually think I do believe in his ability to eventually get there. I mean, I know he's very small, but when he gets to the rim and he's playing hard, I think that's been an inconsistent thing. There's like a little bit of a joke online of him, like national TV Tyrese is already a thing. Like the few big ranked matchups that Kentucky has had this year, Maxey's gone off, and then he's just been sort of inconsistent in a lot of other games, and they haven't been a super great team this year. So I think he can eventually become a starter. I think he has to be in a pretty specific situation with bigger wings around him, and I think he can be a pretty good point of attack defender. He's small, but he's quick, and he generates steals and all of that. So I think that there are situations where he could be a starter. I think this is another guy to me where it would be another sort of let's put the ball in Devin Booker's hands sort of situation. And if the Suns are eventually thinking they might do that, I think Maxey makes a ton of sense for them, actually. And I think he's a pretty good shooter, can pull up, all of that. So I like him, but I don't think you're going to take him where they are going to be drafting if you only see him as a bench player.
Yeah, speaking of, I'm glad you brought up the point about Maxey and big games, because I was looking at his game log where you were just mentioning that 27 against Louisville, 26 against Michigan State, 22 against Auburn, three top teams so far this year in college basketball, and Maxey went off each time. So definitely some credence to that notion you brought up there. And I think, what's your thoughts on a guy like Maxey? Do you think he has like a higher upside than a guy like a Nico Mannion, a Tyrese Haliburton? You get to rank those three guys. Do you think he has the highest upside?
Maybe. Yeah, I would say with Mannion, like you think of him as a shooter because he's a little more comfortable. That's sort of his best skill on offense. But the numbers have not really backed it up. And the same is true for Maxey. So you're kind of comparing the hypothetical version of their shooting. And I actually think Maxey, like, to me, he's a little bit of a, I don't know what you want, like a Jason Terry, Deion Waiters, heat check type of guy. And so he has enough confidence to fill an ocean. He's not going to be concerned with taking those types of pull-up threes. It's just a matter of who do you believe in making them more often. And I think with Maxey, I think his defense is probably has a little more upside, especially on the ball. And I think he's going to be able to score inside a little better. He has a more of a pull-up mid-range game, more of a finishing skill set. And so to me, Mannion doesn't have that, has less of a chance to have that. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's why you're seeing Maxey higher on most mock drafts, most draft boards online from people who cover this stuff than Nico right now.
Yeah, I was just trying to compare a guy like Maxey. I agree with you. I would probably lean Maxey over Nico, but I think it's really close. I'm honestly might go Haliburton over all three of them just because I feel like I'm just really in love with Tyrese Haliburton as a prospect. So I think he makes a lot of sense for the Suns team. But looking at Maxey, I'm just trying to think back to the last year's draft class. And I know Coby White was a player mentioned an awful lot to the Suns at some points. I know John Gamadora mentioned that they're probably going to take Coby White if they didn't trade back from six. I feel like Tyrese Maxey kind of reminds me of Coby White in that sense, doesn't it? As far as just the style of play?
Yeah. Yeah, not as good of a shooter. At least the numbers don't show that yet. And probably not as good of a passer. At least, you know, White just had such a control of the game in transition, which is just a unique sort of weird skill set for a player to have that White just all of a sudden mastered at North Carolina in that up-tempo system. So I think White has just shown it a little bit more consistent, or at least as a freshman last year, showed it a little bit more consistently than Maxey has. But when you talk about the ability for Maxey to just kind of turn it on in an instant when these games get big, well, he's going to be playing in a lot of big games in the next month. And so he to me screams the type of player who right now, compared to what we would say on maybe April 20th, could be a lot different if he just stacks up these crazy 20 and 10 types of games.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. And I think today's show, Brent, kind of showed, I mean, obviously the 2020 class is probably the weakest we've seen. I mean, since we've been doing this podcast compared to 2019, 2018, this is definitely the least superior class. But
by far.
I think these groups of prospects we talk about today, actually, like these six, there's definitely even more than what we talk about today. There's actually a cluster of prospects, if the Suns indeed do keep their pick in that late lottery range, that a lot actually could be on the table for them.
Yeah, and what's fun about this draft, just to circle back to, again, just kind of what people should be, what Suns fans should be looking out for. I know we listed two players here who are injured, but there's also just, I mean, you watch anybody, because I think this draft is so scattered. I mean, there's maybe a handful, maybe two or three guys who are for sure not going to be available to the Suns, just unless they get crazy lottery luck and end up in that top four on lottery night. But anyone else to me could easily be there for them. I think things are so clustered, or I mean, so scattered and so random this year, that a big game from this guy, a team that falls in love with this guy, a combine performance here and there, and you're looking at a player who's just like Maxey in the top five almost undoubtedly right now, and then he's sitting there at number 9 or number 10 when the Suns are drafting, because the dice just kind of fall that way. So I would say anyone you guys see in the top 20 could easily be in play, and we'll talk about a lot more of them as the season goes on.
Yeah, this is definitely a fun episode. We kind of went deep onto prospects for you guys as we get closer and closer to March Madness kicking off here next month. And the NBA draft, surprisingly enough, is just right around the corner. So we only have 2 months left of the regular season, and it's going to be all offseason talk, going into the draft and free agency, an important offseason once more for the Phoenix Suns. But that's it for this episode of Locked On Suns. Appreciate everybody listening in. As always, we'll be back with you guys on Monday for next episode.